Hi everyone, it's Natalie here, and welcome to another episode of the Nourishing Wisdom Podcast. I am thrilled to be reading you a story from one of the most amazing books that I've ever read on the topic of disordered eating, eating disorders, and recovery. And this is the book by Dr. Anita Johnston called Eating in the Light of the Moon: How Women Can Transform Their Relationships with Food Through Myths, Metaphors, and Storytelling. So this book was, you know, I actually don't even remember how I found this book. It was almost like the book found me, but it's been a game changer, a life changer. Every story, chapter in this book is just filled with a new way of understanding your struggles with body image, food, and eating in a very non-pathologizing, humanizing, validating way. So I would like to read you chapter 3 from this book. This chapter is called The Beginning, Revisioning the Struggle. I remember reading this chapter so many years ago and feeling a sense of relief, like, oh my gosh, as suspected, there's deeper meaning to my struggles than, you know, what's written from a clinical perspective, right? Which is largely based on symptoms. So I hope you enjoy the story and may it help you to reimagine and understand your struggles in a more validating light that will take the shame out of whatever it is that is happening with you, body image, and food. This Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale is about a very vain emperor who didn't care much about ruling his people well. Instead, he was interested mostly in fine jewels and fancy clothing. One day, two con men came into town who claimed they made the most exquisite clothing, clothing that was so fine only those who were fit for the office they held could see them. Stupid, ignorant people could not see the fine clothes. The emperor was taken in by these two and commissioned them to make him a new wardrobe. The two con men pretended to weave the cloth on looms and stitch the fabric. Everyone who worked for the emperor raved about the beautiful patterns and colors, for they didn't dare give any indication that they were not fit for their office. The emperor himself expressed great satisfaction, not wanting to reveal his stupidity, and dressed himself in his new clothes for the procession through town. As he paraded through the streets, the townspeople oohed and aahed so their neighbors would not think they were ignorant folk. Except for one small child who turned to her mother and said in a loud voice, "Mommy, but the emperor has nothing at all. He's not wearing anything at all." This comment created a ripple throughout the crowd, and eventually all the townspeople saw the truth as it was. For a woman struggling with disordered eating, this story has much relevance. At some early point in her life, usually beginning around age 4, she was like the small child in the village. She could see things as they really were and was not taken in by others' descriptions of reality. She would pick up on discrepancies between what people said and what they did. She could sense when something was wrong, even when everyone around her said everything was okay. But unlike the child in the story, when this young girl spoke the truth or brought to light that things were not as they seemed, her truth was not well received. Instead, her statements were either ignored or met with fear and hostility from family members or authority figures. She got the message, usually nonverbal, that her ability to perceive the truth, her particular sensitivity to that which was outside the awareness of others, was dangerous, that it could bring about ridicule and rejection, abuse, or even disintegration of the family. A very dangerous consequence for a four-year-old girl. This put the young girl in a very uncomfortable position. In order to survive, she had to find a way to conceal who she really was, to diminish this ability to see the invisible, to quiet that voice inside of her that spoke the truth. She had to hide her sixth sense, her female intuition, not only from others, but also from herself. For acknowledging her differentness, even secretly to herself, would have resulted in extreme emotional distress, a sense of not belonging or fitting in, that would have been unbearable. And so began the process of disowning the wise woman inside of her. And how did she do this? She did this by accepting other people's perceptions of realities and rejecting her own. This was easy if her perceptions could not be validated by the five senses or logic, and if others around her were insistent that theirs was the only accurate perception of reality. She stopped listening to her inner voice for guidance and started to follow the rules of others. She denied herself her greatest heart's desires and replaced them with lengthy mental lists of shoulds and shouldn'ts. She strived to become a totally rational human being without any regard for the emotional and spiritual aspects of her being. She viewed her appetite and desires as evil, and thus perceived her body and its female manifestations as the enemy, rather than as her physical connection to a greater source of knowing. This rejection of a large part of her being, however, eventually takes its toll. As the years go by, she is plagued with a vague, uneasy sense of emptiness. So she tries to fill herself up. Since she is no longer clear about what she longs for, she assumes her hunger is a physical one. And so she either eats compulsively or becomes horrified at her seemingly insatiable appetite and proceeds to starve herself. She then continues through life with the assumption that there is something very wrong with her. After all, if she sees things a certain way and no one else does, there must be something wrong with her. Her struggle with food confirms that indeed there is something wrong with her. This then becomes her focus, her obsession. If only she could fix this problem, then everything would be okay. One of the first things a woman on the path of recovery from disordered eating must do is to reframe her concept of who she really is. She must recognize her bright, intuitive nature for the gift that it is, even though others' discomfort with it has brought upon her some struggles and emotional wounding. She must begin to assert, both to herself and the world around her, that she is not defective. She must begin to review and retell the story of her life from the understanding that there is nothing wrong with her. That although she has been hurt, she is not damaged goods. Her disordered eating behavior is not evidence that she is a faulty human being in desperate need of repair. The recovering woman needs to recognize that her obsession with food and fat does not define who she is. Her perspective must shift so that she can see this obsession not as some horrible character defect, but rather as a simple and much-needed protective mechanism she picked up along her journey through life. It is something she has learned to use to help her deal with the emotional distress of being different or feeling misunderstood, unaccepted, or overwhelmed. She needs to consider the possibility that the development of disordered eating patterns may not necessarily have been such a poor choice given the limited options, resources, or coping skills she had available to her during stressful periods or times of crisis in her life. Imagine yourself standing in the rain on the bank of a raging river. Suddenly, the water-swollen bank gives way. You fall in and find yourself being tossed around in the rapids. Your efforts to keep afloat are futile, and you are drowning. By chance, along comes a huge log, and you grab it and hold on tight. The log keeps your head above water and saves your life. Clinging to the log, you are swept downstream and eventually come to a place where the water is calm. There, in the distance, you see the riverbank and attempt to swim to shore. You are unable to do so, however, because you are still clinging to the huge log with one arm as you stroke with the other. How ironic. The very thing that saved your life is now getting in the way of your getting where you want to go. There are people on shore who see you struggle and yell, "Let go of the log!" But you aren't able to do so because you have no confidence in your ability to make it to shore. This is not unlike the position many people find themselves in when they first become aware of their disordered eating. They feel foolish at best, humiliated at worst, that they are unable to stop a behavior that is interfering with their desire to get where they want to go in life. In the face of their shame, they quickly forget the role their disordered eating played in their survival. How it helped them keep their heads above water through some rough times by giving them a way to deal with their conflicts, feelings, and difficult situations. They immediately assume that there must be something wrong with them to continue such destructive behavior. This view, unfortunately, is supported by well-meaning friends, family, and professionals who suggest that they just stop doing it, stop starving themselves, stop binging and purging, stop eating compulsively, stop gaining weight. Simply letting go of the log may not, in fact, be the best course of action to take. What would happen if you let go of the log, began to swim to shore, and got halfway there, only to find that you didn't have the strength to make it all the way? This means that you won't be able to make it back to the log either. Many people feel foolish for clinging to the log, and many of their friends, family, and even health professionals become frustrated with their resistance to letting go. They assume the tenacity with which they cling to their disordered eating is a personality flaw, rather than a sign from within that more preparation is needed. Recovery from disordered eating requires honoring rather than condemning the resistance encountered. It insists upon a recognition that any behavior that slows, stalls, or creates obstacles in the path toward recovery has meaning and a purpose that can be valuable, even essential. It insists upon a recognition that any behavior that slows, stalls, or creates obstacles in the path toward recovery has meaning and a purpose that can be valuable, even essential. A woman who seeks recovery needs to understand clearly the ways in which her disordered eating has served her so that she can stop viewing it as simply an obstacle to her happiness. Only then can she know precisely which skills she needs to develop in order to live a life free from binging, dieting, and food obsessions. One woman may discover that her fat has helped her avoid unwanted sexual advances from men. This tells her that assertiveness is a skill she needs to develop before she can let go of her weight problem. Another woman may discover that she has binged and purged to eliminate inner tension she experiences when faced with conflict. This means that in order to resolve her bulimia, she needs to learn some conflict resolution skills. Yet another woman may recognize that her obsession with dieting helped her cope with an intrusive alcoholic mother, and for her, recovery entails learning how to set boundaries in relationships. To recover from disordered eating requires the development of whatever skills are necessary to replace the function of the log. Once a woman develops these skills, she will discover that they are much more effective and efficient than the disordered eating behavior, and will tend to choose to use them to help her cope with whatever stresses life throws her way. She can then let go of the log, relying on her newfound skills to keep her afloat and to give her the strength she needs to make it to shore. And so, very slowly and carefully, you let go of the log and practice floating. When you start to sink, you grab back on. Then you let go of the log and practice treading water. And when you get tired, hold on once again. After a while, you practice swimming around the log once, twice, 10 times, 20 times, 100 times, until you gain the strength and confidence you need to swim to shore. Only then do you completely let go of the log. Recovery from disordered eating begins with the understanding that the disordered eating behavior served you when your goal was survival. This understanding is then followed by the development of new skills that will enable you not to simply survive, but to get what you want out of life, to thrive. Survival is no longer the only goal. The goal becomes one that includes a life that is rich and fulfilling. It is a gradual, step-by-step process that calls for letting go of judgment. That is, there is something wrong with me. The development of some important life skills and learning to trust that inner voice that will tell you when you are ready. Wow, wasn't that chapter simply fantastic? I mean, reading this chapter out loud again from my current position as a survivor, as a clinician, as a woman, it's hitting me in all kinds of ways. Every time I reread one of the chapters in the book, it just gives me new insights all the time. So I highly recommend this book. And if you like to share your reflections and thoughts after listening to this chapter, I'd love to hear from you. You can write to me through my website at www.theinnerconnection.co, and I will be sure to read all of them and respond to you as soon as I can. And yeah, that's all for now, you guys, and I'll see you all in the next episode.